Okay, go.
Okay, talking about Singletary and some of these guys that were actually very nice people, and here's a young Canadian guy, and these are all you alls, big titles and names and all that, and little jewels they passed on. And one of them was, and don't forget the guy's wife. This is the most powerful person in the corporation. And if you don't get along with her, you're dead. And it became very apparent as Mom and I met different people in the social aura of the oil industry, which is very stratified, just how powerful the women were. These are little jewels that you just pick up from guys that are family experience, and they're smart, and they've survived the jungle of big business. They didn't get there because of pull. They got there because they're just tough and smart.
That's American, not British?
That's American. And later on, Canadians like BJ and Doc and Billy Bass, who was actually American, Old McMahon. These guys were just dynamite personalities.
What were the Brits like?
The way who?
What were the British like?
The British were... No, just a different ball of wax. It was almost a joke working for them.
So that would be BP mostly?
Yeah,
with
that
some
was
shell.
BP, like even their geological. I was a peon, and a lot of them weren't as smart as I were. They were politically or family. The French companies were the same. Half of them were old French royalty. Many of the foreign countries were the guys that supposedly scooted out of when the communists took over, like the Romanian oil companies, etc., so on. And they had some representation here, and they were really quite humorous. Not saying they didn't have some good working guys underneath, but the management were pretty high in the social change of the world.
Hmm. So that was up until 1962 with Hughley. Then what happened after that in 62?
Well, when Hughley died, I went for a short time with Ken Jennings, and he turned out to
Hughley
be...
Hughley died when?
Around 62 or 63, I went with Jennings in the interim period, and I was supposed to run the company. It turned out he just wanted a lecky that new people, and he also wanted me to keep records on the frailties socially of clients and their wives, and I just...
So what were you doing under Jennings? He was the
I
new...
was supposed to be running it. It was I just became a bum boy.
Yeah, what was the title?
So in the meantime...
What was your title?
Pardon me?
What was your title in the...
I was supposed to be president of his drilling company. And I had several companies after me at that point to run their drilling companies. And I probably erroneously selected Trinity Drilling, a family-owned old hierarchical...
What date?
Trinity.
What date?
And circa 64. And this was the old man and his wife who owned it and lived in Fort Worth. They were in love with your mother, and even took her down to the ranch. And when I, in Texas, when they had a biggie, and I asked them how the hell I didn't get asked down on these trips. He said, "You got to work and pay for it." So he was good, but his son was a playboy, and so was his son-in-law, who was my immediate boss, and it had its nice points, but certainly there's no place in it for me for a future. He also died, and that put us on the market again.
Who died?
Ralph Rush, the owner of Trinity in the States. So I'm out of another job. But then the son-in-law and the head of Hughes Bit, they bought the company, financed by Commonwealth Drilling. And this was really a disaster. And Billy was spending more money than I could earn with four rigs.
And then Billy expanded with your...
And then Billy...
Who's
just,
Billy? His...
Billy Day was the guy that was one of the owners.
Mark.
I was supposed to have a percentage of the company, and he just left town and left the company broke. And I was out of job again.
Okay, so that was Trinity, so that was only a year?
Oh, no.
No, I was there two or three or four years.
We
I can't,
Australia.
No, I couldn't have been there.
We went to Australia in 66.
I must have been, yeah, because I went to Australia in 60s. So after that, yeah, you got to go with a circle on these numbers. I can't remember the
Yeah, I'm just, it's approximate, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Because in circa 65, I really did nothing but holiday. He built the place. Did we build the place?
That's
no,
where
that
you,
was after
that's
Israel.
When you had Texaco up at Banff.
What's that? Oh, that's when I took the big Texaco station at Canmore and thought I'd just go fishing on the Kananaskis. I never worked so hard for so little in my life. And they offered me two more, the Texaco in town in Banff and the one right beside the Banff gates, because I'd taken it from a total loss to making a profit in less than 6 months. It still wasn't very much of a profit, but... And then where the hell did I go from there?
You did Israel.
I came back
oh,
into
Australia.
Calgary in September.
Who, you were with Frank Reading and Bates then after that.
To where?
You went to Reading and Bates after that.
No, I didn't. Before that I was with Banff Oil. Oh, and then I came back to town.
Oh, yeah.
And John Rudolph had just discovered Banff Oil, or just discovered the Rainbow Lake, and he hired me to go to Rainbow Lake to look after the affairs because they were basically a six-man company and they were exploding. And they had one guy in the production department, of course, with the hiring of me two guys, the spy and... I went up there and tried to control and the inventory and even selected the town site of Rainbow with the assistance of photogrammetrists. Also discovered they were sitting on a gravel pile and we were searching like hell to get a gravel pile to make roads to get into Rainbow Lake. I was there when Ron Southern built the airstrip. And there was, I have a picture of one of the trailer that Russell, who ran the drilling and I ran the administration end of it. We had just a painted board sign that said Rainbow Lake population 60, Rainbow Lake 112 as it grew. and so it had a lot of a million stories of oil field scouting, spies, blowouts, and the building of the airstrip in Gumbo. You can go on and on. The off path is just loaded with legendary and bullshit.
That's what they call the farm fields, especially some of them out near SR. Gumbo.
Gumbo is the old Alberta clay. It'll stick to anything.
Quite the life trying to get farm equipment working properly.
Jeez, it's unbelievable. We had a beaver come into the strip one time in emergency, and it had been raining, and he landed on the strip with the otter, and it is a two-wing with the wheels, the big rubber wheels, and it didn't go 50 feet before the gumbo was so thick on his wheels, it was bumping up against the wings, almost. Actually, the struts and the wheels wouldn't turn. You can just go on and on with the legends and the stores and the equipment. Oh, and I bought the bridge for Rudolph. We were trying to keep the majors out, and we had built a road from the inside and out from, I forget the name of the farmmost town on the Mackenzie Highway at that time, and that's where you came into Rainbow Lake from the north, but there was a bridge on the Indian Reserve, and the Indians were kind of half-charging you and slowing up. So John said, go up and meet him. So I went up and met the chief, but he put me on to the Catholic priest, and it cost me a set of drums for the Catholic Church who gave it to the Indian chief, and we owned the bridge and we controlled the bridge. Alberta government counteracted it with making the sharing of oil field roads on usage basis. That's where it all started.
Really?
Yeah. Because we had them shut out, and they were some pissed off. So we had Exxon Mobil through all crying. Because you know, I knew them, you son of a bitch, Howell. Okay. But these are just little sidelines, because you don't work out in the field unless you work hard, you meet, and it's nothing but problems. You got to solve problems every minute, either mechanical or personnel.
So you're only with Rainbow Lake
two or three months, and they hired me permanently to be to work in the drilling in the production department, where I was a well-paid clerk, giving out bids, purchasing agent, very strong influence in even the engineering end. I even made the drilling programs and sent out the bids, which I selected. Rudolph wanted five rigs in there, so I went out to bid to about 10 companies. I kicked who the hell did I even work for them later? Tony Vandenbrink, who drilled the Discovery for Banff. I even kicked them out because I believe in the low bid and no payola.
Okay, well, just a minute. This is in Banff, so you went to Banff when?
Vandenbrink. He owns, isn't that awful? That's who I was working for in Israel. And
But when did you go to Banff Oil? It must have been in 65. If you went to Australia...
It was 65. Because on sending out the bids, I hired two Baden rigs. I forget now. I think Peter Baden rig. There were two Baden rigs. Reading and Bates, anyways, five companies, and it was shortly after Reading and Bates hired me to be the assistant manager in Canada.
But wait a minute, you said you worked several years at Rainbow Lake.
No, not years, months.
Months, okay. So it's still the same year that you'd flipped over to
Banff. Yeah, I was only with Banff a short while. And I was back in the drilling business. where basically I was a contract, and Frank and I had a girl, and she was the clerk. So I didn't do clerking, but I watched it very closely, because anything to do with operating and field operations, you've got to watch costs immensely, and also theft by employees and people who go to the rig to do service work. The theft is unbelievable.
Okay, so that's with Banff Oil. And then Reading and Bates hired you from Banff. When was that, in early 66?
It had to be, because I was too many months. And and Reading and Bates, Hugh Planch had the job I got, and he was fired because they hadn't made money in 10 years. I was with them 6 months, and they made the first money in 10 years.
Who was that Hugh Planch?
Pardon me?
Wasn't he a politician?
Was an MLA, and became very wealthy under Peter Lougheed. One of the many ones.
Okay, so with Reading and Bates, and then in 1966 you went to Australia.
And then approximately June, I was advised that we would be going to Australia. However, the real notification came when I went to work one Monday morning, and Frank Garner took me down to a little shop on about 13th Avenue and 1st Street West, where they sold travel
luggage.
And he started buying this fancy luggage, big ones, small ones, and I said, what the hell do you need for your luggage for? He says, I don't. He says, you do. You're going to Australia tomorrow morning. Or maybe 2 days. I'm not going to argue that. So, and that's just how it worked. And you enter, once again, you're out of a job. So you guys became residents of not too long. In Brisbane.
Okay, let's stop for a minute. I don't trust this thing, so it's...